Driving the Culture Forward. This is Hype East Radio. My name is Ben Rosen. I'm here today with
Madral Stinney.
And we are here with Nate and Zach from St. Woods. How you guys doing?
What's good?
Doing good.
What's good, New York?
Thanks for having us, man.
Hey, flew in safely. It's good news.
Beat
How you guys doing
beat
today?
The snowstorm.
We're doing good, man. Feeling great. Happy to be here.
That's awesome. What brings you guys to New York?
Just came to check you guys, came for a couple of meetings and just say what's up to some friends.
Nice. And what's been good with you guys lately? What have you guys been, you guys were in LA earlier this week?
Yeah, we were in LA earlier this week. We own a club called Apartment 200. We have one in Montreal and one in Toronto. So we're trying to keep expanding that. So we got our kind of eyes on LA at the moment. So hopefully we can update you guys with some good news soon.
Perfect. And that's a pretty good intro to everything that you guys do. Let's kind of take a step back.
Yep.
And how would you guys describe what you guys do? Let's give them a breakdown of like the St. Woods Ecole Privée. I said that right?
Yeah, you said that right. So St. Woods started, like if we're going to go all the way back, St. Woods was actually started by Nate and a couple of his friends in university back in 2006. And they were really at the forefront of introducing like electronic shows to the college market and kind of in a parallel universe in Montreal. I was working in like the more like nightlife scene, very nightlife oriented scene in Montreal, which has like a long history of its own. And then we kind of met, I think it was 2011, where we kind of...
I was producing kind of more like concert style shows and Zach was kind of on the more like higher end like market, and we teamed up on one big event. It was a big outdoor event that I was producing, and we hired Zach and the people he was working with to take care of kind of like the bottle service section and just also bringing in a different crowd, and we just saw kind of like the synergy between like what I was doing and what he was doing, and we just kind of like teamed up and started working on a couple events, and a few months later like I was doing St. Woods on my own at that point. I was like, you want to just team up, like, and we were like, it was just kind of like seamless. But from the beginning, when my friend, like Zach mentioned, when my friends and I started St. Woods in 2006, we always thought of it as like this multifaceted thing. We didn't really know what we were doing or what we wanted to do, but we knew we wanted to throw parties. We were making t-shirts. We had a music blog. We were just like kind of like from the very beginning trying to have different channels of like of everything we're doing. Most people will start with one and then kind of branch out. We're like, we're gonna do five at once, which like, you know, some people are like, that's crazy or whatever, but like it's always kind of just been what piques our interest is just more than one thing, you know. It's like overall just kind of trying to tie together.
And I think last time you guys were here, you guys mentioned that you started selling the merch almost as like, just like almost.
We didn't even start by selling it.
Yeah,
it was more like giving it away.
Like exactly, at the party.
Yeah, like, well, like a lot of, I think a lot of people have that story. They're like, we just made t-shirts for our friends. And then it was like, that's legit what it was. Like we'd do parties where basically we'd print, you know, 50 t-shirts. We'd get a bunch of like homies or kids like wearing them beforehand. And then we'd throw them out at the concert. So next thing you know, it's like, it's everyone's just in St. Woods t-shirts. So it was just cool. It was a cool feeling. And then that just kind of drove the need for other people who are like, yo, why has everyone got one and I don't? So eventually we just were like, let's just start making stuff.
Yeah, and we wanted to like actually form it into like drops or collections, you know, kind of put, I think collections is tough when you look at, I'm not trying to compare ourselves to anybody who's putting out any like massive full like high fashion collections, but we wanted to kind of group them together and do drop based releases. And that allowed us to think harder onto what our merch was rather than just like our logo on a t-shirt. It was like, right, okay, where can we take this? Can we have some fun with this? And get people more interested.
When you guys do these drops, you also have like, you know, videos to coincide with that and pop-ups that you do as well.
Yeah, I mean, we like to use both our products, whether it be like the hospitality venues or whether it be our shirts, is kind of like a business card for us, and it lets us kind of flex our creative muscles on our own products. And then we're able to, yeah, like use what we've learned, whether it be working with other clients or test new ideas on our own stuff.
We just, and at the same time, like we got a great team of guys that work with us, like our full-time designers and, you know, different people in the office. And it's always a collaborative process where we're just kind of like, okay, how can we like make an impact, do something a little different, have fun on our own, be creative, you know, like it's always just kind of like trying to think of like a little bit outside of the box. You're never going to reinvent the wheel. You know what I mean? Like in some capacity, almost every idea has already been done. It's just like, how can we put our spin on it? How can we, you know, repurpose something we've seen far in the past, so it's not something that's maybe fresh in somebody's mind. Mm-hmm. Like, but the amount of times that you'll come up with an idea, yeah, and we're like, okay, we're moving forward on this, and then it's like somebody kind of beats you to the punch, and it's not even like there's no way that you two that there was any link between it. It was just like
a coincidence. It just happened, yeah,
you know, and that happens pretty often just because of the amount of people doing creative like stuff these days. Yeah, it's like it just kind of like, it's funny that happens a lot. So it's
I think it's also that we're getting a lot of our, like, I think that as a culture it's very globalized right now. Mm-hmm. Like whether it be the team from the guys from London or from LA or from Montreal or wherever, we're all kind of looking at the same Instagram feed, or a lot of us have the same kind of interests, and through that, especially I think if you are kind of studying culture or you're interested in music, art and fashion, you're going to pick up on the same cues and be inspired and time by some of the same things as other people. And it's just a matter of making sure that you're staying true to your own image or your own like business like mentality, and making sure that you're following that, and not getting nervous by, oh, this guy's stuff kind of looks like ours. Like, we make our decisions independently and then just try and make sure that we find it interesting, our team is excited about working on it, they find it interesting, and if that's kind of the
key, just trust our own judgment, kind of like, yeah.
And you mentioned things that kind of, like, you were doing five different things at once. What are some of the services and things that you guys do beyond the merch?
So I'd say at the moment, so again, we started off kind of with events. The events kept kind of growing and growing, and we then through that had an opportunity to open up our first bar, which is called Suwu. It's kind of like a smaller restaurant bar, but on weekends we have DJs and kind of turns up a bit. Mm-hmm. And it was funny, when we first opened that, people didn't, because they were so used to us doing like 1,000-person concerts and big ass parties. So it's like, it was like a rager. And we're like, no, this isn't the vibe here. Like, but like, we just
turned down.
Yeah, yeah, we're like, turned down. No. But then, like, a few, we were lucky that went well. And we had the opportunity, like, our partners, they're called A5 Hospitality. They own a lot of different bars and restaurants in Montreal. They had another spot up the street, and they're like, hey, like, this has gone good. Do you guys want to team up on another one? And we're like, yeah. And we had an idea that actually came from a house party we went to in New York, in this like beautiful loft that this person had kind of kitted out with, like, they had an old refurbished bar from like this bar that went out of business in Brooklyn in the middle of their loft, and like art on the walls and just cool furniture, and we're always like, oh, this would be a dope like
bar.
Like if a bar looked like this, like, yeah, you know, everybody loves a house party. So we had that concept. So we just kind of looked at each other when we had that opportunity, and we're like, try that. And we're like, yeah. And luckily our partners went for that. And that
so that's
ended up being apartment 200.
That's, yeah. So that's the concept. So that was basically a hop-in house party.
Exactly.
Yeah, and a place that you can be comfortable, I think, no matter what, is like a lot to do with it as well. And that you could introduce, like at a house party, it's like when you go to a nightclub, you're expecting a certain kind of music all the time or a certain environment. And I think that by kind of, we're not trying to be like a thematic bar, you know what I mean? It's not like you come in and it's like, oh, take your shoes off, welcome to the house party. Like, that's not the vibe.
Yeah.
But we try and make sure that it does have that kind of freedom that a house party does. So it's like some nights you'll hear some like really avant-garde music. We'll really be able to book some like interesting artists where they may not be able to do a full ticketed show yet, but they'll do like their two hits with us, and it gives them a really good opportunity to interact with their fans or with our clients. But then we can also do more of like a commercial night on a Saturday night where you just feel like you're at someone's house party and you're just getting lit. So the malleability of the concept allows us to introduce art, introduce interesting installations. It can be fluid. It's not like it is such a like a, I think so often people come out with concepts that are so cemented in what they are, where apartment lets
they
us
have
kind
the same
of
thing every night.
Yeah, exactly. We're given the freedom to kind of one day do a party with Stussy and the next day do like an after party for the weekend, but they both kind of fit in the same thing, you know?
And like you said about the house party thing, like sometimes you get like smaller acts coming up, and so you have gotten to play sort of like an A&R.
Yeah. But that's always kind of been, like I said, that was kind of like our background with, you know, through booking shows and that kind of stuff. So and when we opened Sue, the smaller restaurant bar, and like we said, people were turning up, we didn't really have the ability to, you know, use our full kind of like our wheelhouse. Like, we were like, so when we got the chance to open apartment 200, which was a much bigger venue, mm-hmm, we're like, okay, we can do some of, you know, we can do some of the bookings that we weren't able to do at this other restaurant, and we can still you know, we can still fulfill that side of our business, like the booking acts, and because that's something we love, is like finding the up and coming acts before they're really big. And you know, we've been really lucky to work with a lot of artists who turned into like superstars.
Yeah, who are some of the people that came through when they were
oh man,
like we booked Party Next Door for his first show ever.
Wow.
It was like he was a hosting, actually. It wasn't even a concert. He hadn't even performed yet.
Wow. We did some of Post Malone's early shows. His whole camp's been supportive with us like from the beginning. And then that, like, even like Kate Renata, who's from Montreal, someone who's a really good friend of ours, like they were already like so destined for greatness, but we were able to kind of get his early shows, and he would kind of just stop in and do like occasional sets, and it was like really great for us because we were already fans, but we were able to kind of be a place where I think he was able to test some of his music or just kind of have fun with his fans that were like falling in love with him kind of in front of our eyes.
We always kind of always try and make it like a less formal setting. Like it's really like, you know, democratic, where like the DJ booth isn't up on a stage or anything. Like it is like a house party. Like they're really in
someone's
the mix
on the aux cord.
Yeah. Like exactly. But
sometimes Nathan is on the aux cord, like later in the night after.
When, like we had Travis Scott two or three times, and the first time we had him, he was big both times, but the first time we had him, like it was chill. The second time was like insane. Like it was, he was hanging from a pipe
sprinkler pipe.
Our water main, and I'm like sitting there, and because we had set up a whole section for him to perform, and then he comes in and he's like, no, I'm gonna do it right here.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, it's on this wobbly table, like literally like a foot wide. Yeah.
It's a
and
death
like
trap.
We have his security holding people back, our security holding the table. I'm sitting there just stressing out, like watching him hang from this pipe. But it was like, it turned out to be an amazing night, an amazing moment. Mm-hmm. Like it's just stuff like that that keeps us like excited and like, you know, want to like just keep moving.
And that A&R thing, Ben, that you were bringing up is kind of like how we were able to then transition into what we work on a lot now. Like we're still focusing on obviously continuing our hospitality expansion with Apartment 200 and making sure our clubs and restaurants stay healthy. But then through kind of our ability to identify artists that were coming next or brands that were coming next, kind of like bigger international brands, especially within the Canadian market to start. And now, thankfully, on a bit more of an international level, we're identifying us as like, wait, how do these guys like...
No.
How do they know? You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
And honestly, for us, it was we read great blogs, or we go to like check good magazines, or make sure that we stay up to date. But then we were able to kind of transition that into working as an agency for a couple of different brands, and that's now something that we've really been able to kind of expand on.
Circle back to the original question.
Yeah.
That's another thing besides hospitality that we're now working on, is kind of the more agency stuff, whether it be design or experiential for some bigger brands. So. Yeah, besides the clothing and the hospitality, the agency side is playing a big part, and we're also dabbling in some other products that hopefully will be on people's radar pretty soon.
Yeah, who are some of the brands that you guys like, you know, work with?
Right now, I mean, we did a tour for Hennessy Canada, mm-hmm. or Hennessy Across Canada last year with Roy Woods. We actually used photographer Hannah Sider, who's living out here in New York, and Jagan, who produced the song Unforgettable. We put them together for a tour across Canada. We've worked with Perrier. We did the Nike kind of collaboration and activation for the 35th anniversary, which was really cool. Working with brands like Aldo, Essence, like we do content creation sometimes for Essence. So
they're up there too.
Yeah, exactly.
My next question was going to be something like, what's the state of the union in Montreal?
It's really cool because
I feel like Toronto gets all the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is there like a competition internally?
I'd say in the past there was more, when there was less communication between the two cities.
Right.
And there was kind of, I guess based on like old school hockey rivalry or something, like people just like literally, but then
like Quebecois. Like,
yeah, it was like, you know, Montreal is in Quebec, which is French speaking. I mean, but Montreal itself as a city is very bilingual. Like it's, you know, there's a lot of English speakers there as well. But Toronto obviously has a big spotlight because of guys like The Weeknd or Drake, or, you know, a lot of the other guys you mentioned, Party Next Door, Roy Woods, Majid Jordan, like all these guys that are, you know, on the come up. There's a really good burgeoning music scene there. Mm-hmm. But Montreal is very cool, kind of like undercover, like puts out tons of like awesome creatives, whether it be like, you know, Sid Lee, or like, which is like a big marketing agency. You know, a bunch of guys behind the scenes that kind of like are really pushing culture forward, but you might not know about them as much. And then there's, you know, like great clothing companies like Dime or New Regime, or like, so, and the thing about Montreal is it's a smaller city, And it kind of forces you, like, if somebody's a jerk, you're not going to mess around with them. But it's like, yeah, everybody's pretty, like, cordial and nice and supportive of each other and, like, isn't worried about, like, oh, is this person my competition or this or that? Like, we all support each other's, you know, events and different, like, you know, whatever kind of collections we're putting forward.
Yeah, I think there's also, Montreal's lucky in the sense where it has such an affordable cost of living. So when you are a creative out there, you're able to actually focus on your art and, like, I always make jokes that, like, most kids in Montreal normally, like, either waitressing or selling pot, and then at the side they're a creative director. You know what, right, I mean? And, like, yeah, that's, but it's great, and it's really interesting, and there's so, it's also a university town, right? So you get a ton, I think we have like six, with the English and the French together, I think we have six major universities in Montreal for a city that's not that big.
Super young.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. So you get these great young people who come in and they're just sponge for information. They also bring all this new stuff. And what's cool is because we have so many international students that come in and the cost of living is so cheap, they'll come, they have the time of their lives, they're going out like crazy, they're going out for, their studies are probably suffering, but they're going out four nights a week, wearing all these clothes, being introduced to all these new lifestyle experiences, and then they go back home and they export that and they bring that information or that knowledge or that kind of, I'm going to say multicultural, not in like the traditional sense, but just in the fact where there's a bunch of different like cultural crews or whatever in Montreal, and they bring that back. And then they're able to introduce that to their friends and their family. So it's pretty cool.
Like,
in that
just
sense.
Ourselves, we've made a lot of contacts with people all over the world just from them going to school and university in Montreal and coming through the bars. And now it's like we have friends on every continent because of it. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with the expansion of, like, you know, apartment 200 from Montreal into Toronto, like, yeah, was it intentional that you guys, like, wanted to, like, inject some of that Montreal vibe into,
yeah,
like, you know,
100%. Yeah, like 100%. Because we had there's a lot of people that either went, like you said, went to university in Montreal and went back to Toronto, or, you know, would come out for some of our events, or just were aware of what we were doing. So people were always like, when are you guys going to open? When are you guys going to open in Toronto? I'm from Toronto originally, so I kind of was like, all right, I'm go back and check this out. And we started to put a bit more emphasis on it. We ended up finding a spot. And yeah, that was always the goal, was like, even in a lot of cities, it just depends where you go out. But we always kind of want to be that middle ground between, like, kind of like a dive bar or the high-end club, you know? Because usually nowadays, if you want to see some of these people we talked about hosting, they're at the more, like, kind of bougie high-end club. So we kind of want to be that middle ground where it's like, you can still have fun and let loose. You're not there to be, like, looking around, oh, who's here, like, do I look cool, like, what does this person think of me? It's like, just let loose, have fun. Like, if you drink, get drunk. If you don't, that's cool. Like, it's kind of just, you know, just come as you are, and like, let's party. Like,
in my imagination, Montreal is such a small city. Do you guys bump into the dudes from Dime? And,
yeah,
like,
I know, they're across the street from us. Yeah,
literally,
their store is like across, like,
I imagine that, but then that's real.
200. Their retail shops across from apartment 200, and their offices just up the street.
What about Jound? Is that like around the corner?
Well, Justin's funny because he's like, he's hard. Anyone who knows him knows he's pretty hard to get out of the house. But when he's in Montreal, he'll definitely, like, I like to think he'll check in, or definitely, you know what I mean? He's I think Justin has a very important role as kind of like, when it comes to influencing a lot of those young companies that we spoke about in Montreal, like, the guy often probably doesn't get the credit. He'll probably hate me for saying this, but doesn't get the credit he deserves. You know, the guy was a major influence for, I think, a lot of us when we were growing up, looking at, like, okay, you can be a creative, or you can be like, you can work kind of on both ends and offer products and do consulting. And obviously he's like a major influence for
us. You brought up Vincent from Dime. Like, and so he works with you guys as well, right?
Well, I mean, we're working with them. We have like one project that we work with them on, which is a block party that's associated with their Glory Challenge, but they're very much their own independent. Vince is just a very good friend of mine, as is the rest of their team. And that's something, like, I can't, like, emphasize that enough, is that the teams in Montreal, whether it be like Dime, New Regime, even the group that does, like, the younger people who are working at Essence, or ourselves, or the guys who worked for Justin, like, we all hang out, like, to the point where it's like, if it's my, like, birthday dinner, like, they're gonna be at, it's not like, oh, we might see them, like, they're invited, they're gonna be at the table,
right.
you know what I mean?
It's pretty close knit.
And what's great for us, especially with a brand like Dime, or brands like New Regime, which I think that on the clothing side are definitely at a very good place right now. We're able to talk to them and we're on really good terms, and they'll like, we can just ask their advice, like, yo, how do you make sure that your drops always pop the way they do? And Dime's really good at dropping clothing, you know. Yeah. And like New Regime, they're so good at making sure that the right people are wearing their gear, and they do that extremely well. And I think that we're able to talk to them about stuff, you know.
Yeah, so it's cool that we can all take mental cues from each other and just shoot the shit, and it's like never, you know, it's never kind of in a malicious or like, oh, this person's trying to bite what I'm doing. It's always just like an open board of like sharing ideas and shit.
I was gonna say, it sounds like a Francophone think tank.
Yeah. Yeah. But most French, of them are English. So, yeah, we all speak English.
But it definitely is a think tank. It's just like it's a family. I think that we know, we're all very aware that if Montreal is going to get the light that it deserves and is going to have kind of the reputation that we hope it does, like, we got to work together and make sure people identify us as a team and as a family, which
is
what we are.
Do you guys think you're close to that? Like, do you think that like you're getting there?
I think it's, well, since a lot of you know, focus has been on Toronto, I think Canada in general is just getting, you know, looked at a little more heavily than it did in the past, or getting a little more credit than it did in the past. And with that, you know, Montreal is the second largest city in Canada. So, I mean, it's kind of that necessary next step, I think. But at the same time, you know, what really got the focus on Toronto was you know Drake and The Weeknd. Like, let's be honest. Yeah. At this
yeah, not enough
time.
People were talking about Shad before. You know what I mean?
Like, you know, so it's like
Cardinal Official. As much as he is a great performer,
yeah. Like, there's always been a great music scene, or like crazy like melting pot of cultures and influences. Like, that's always been there, but it just hasn't, you know, been a focus on anybody outside of Canada, really.
I think that as it grows, it's going to happen. I think it's rare that people, when you say I'm from Montreal, their eyes don't light up. Like, everyone is excited about, like, when you say, oh, I'm from Montreal, whether it be Parisians or whether it be from LA or wherever we're at, they're like, oh, I've heard so many cool things about there. I think
that's the good thing, is that even if people haven't been there, they're still like, oh, I heard it's really cool. Yeah. Like, it's like, okay, at least there's a good
tunnels, man.
Yeah, exactly. There's underground cities.
Yeah. And speaking of, like, you know, shifting that spotlight to Montreal, you guys did like the Nike collaboration, which brought a lot of, like, you know, attention to that. Yeah. Can you explain like how that came to be?
Well, that actually, we did the pop-up in Toronto. Basically when I moved back to Toronto to get apartment 200 started there, that kind of opened up a relationship with the Nike Canada kind of reps, and they liked what we were doing with the bar, and they were kind of just started inviting us to events and stuff, and then they brought us out to ComplexCon
year. Nathan out to start. I snuck my way onto the trip.
Plus one.
Yeah. I was being nice, but yeah, so they invited me out, and I brought Zach with me, and then over that weekend, we got to really, like, you know, we were spending 3-4 days together. We really got to, like, tell our stories and, like, realize kind of the similarities between ourselves and the guys that were running kind of the sportswear and culture stuff at Nike. And after that weekend, we were both just, it was a mutual, like, let's stay in touch. If you guys have any projects, whether it be a collab on, you know, shoes, clothing, events, like, whatever it is, let's keep the dialogue open. And they're like, I think we might have something coming up. And then, yeah, in the spring, we reopened that conversation, and they're like, I think we want to do something for the 35th anniversary of the Air Force. It would be around the ComplexCon time. Mm-hmm. So we just started designing, like, crazy. Like, we were just like, sent them six shoes and like a whole line sheet of clothes, and like they were like, okay, this is cool, but like, you guys need to tone it down. Like, not like tone it down, because in the beginning they were like, yo, we don't want to hold back any of your creativity, just like do whatever you want, and then we'll shape kind of it from there.
We'll steer you in the right
exactly way. so we were like, let's really go for it. So it started off just supposed to be a shoe, but we still sent them a full line sheet of clothing.
We were just talking, we spoke to Eric Emanuel yesterday about a similar thing where he was working with Adidas, where he was like, yeah, they kind of told me to give him an idea. And like, when that happens, when you get the phone call from
the
business,
you gotta go. You gotta do everything. Yeah, you gotta go. Everything.
You're like, listen, man, I made everything from a varsity jacket.
Like, 1,000%. Like, we had full tracksuits, bags, shoes, socks, hats. Like, we did everything. So then they're like, yeah, this is cool, whatever. Like, let's focus on the shoe. But then as the process kept going, the homie was like, shout out Daniel Switzer. He was like, oh, I think I found some dead stock hoodies. Like, I think we got like 200 hoodies in stock. Oh, wait, I got some t-shirts too. Like, yeah. So he got excited about it and was really pulling for us. And like, so then it ended up, we ended up with doing two hoodie designs, two t-shirt designs, the Air Forces. And then we did, a tote bag that was kind of the packaging for it. And then we did two of our like, our own stuff that was inspired by like, you know, old Nike campaigns and stuff like that.
So you still got some of it. You
100%. Got like a fraction. We were stoked. We were super happy with the way it turned out. And what was really awesome is we got a chance, they gave us a budget for the pop-up shop, and that, you know, every drop that we do, we were doing pop-up shops, but it's always like, how can we do the most for the least amount of money? And this time it was like, oh, we actually have a budget. Like, this is cool. So it's like that allowed us to just kind of like take a next step in the retail experience that we were offering. And I think, and it was one of our first times in Toronto as well, doing the retail experience. We had done one pop-up at Contraband earlier, but I think it was really well received, and we were like, couldn't be more happy with the way it turned out. And I think Nike would tell you the same. Like, we sold out the shoes in like 7 minutes. It was nuts.
Yeah, they were tight. That's why.
Thank you.
Simple.
It's important for us, you know, always to make sure that we're offering like those interesting experiences. You know, like, you look at so many brands, whether it be high or low, are always trying to like, what's that cooler, like, experiential marketing is such a buzz, you know, I mean, it's been a buzzword now for a minute, but we started off by throwing experiences. Like, our whole thing was like cultural mixes, like making sure that you're introducing high and low, finding interesting venues, doing cool installations, making like life and just making that day-to-day shit seem less mundane. And so now we're able to like, okay, we're creating products after we are creating experiences, you know, so it's been an interesting way to balance kind of that whole like yin and yang experience, you know what I mean, that yin and yang reality that it is, like, experiences versus product, and what's bringing your clients out or what's interesting people. And we're really trying to focus on the balance.
And I think
of both.
That's one of the reasons when we were talking about the clothing, like, we want it to be kind of an extension of like what we're offering overall, like the vibe you would get at Apartment 200, like, you know, a kid who lives out in Paris or, you know, in Hong Kong or something might not be able to experience Apartment 200 as often as he would like, if ever, but they could, you know, follow what we're doing through, like, obviously Instagram or, like, you know, our website or different things. They can buy the clothing. They can, you know, still be a part of that community and represent kind of that lifestyle, but, like, not having to physically be there. So that was something that was kind of, like, a reason why we were, like, we need to kind of roll out some stuff that's not so localized.
Yeah. And now with your guys' like eyes set on, you know, the United States and stuff, and venturing into like possibly LA with Apartment 200, is that like the plan, where it's like you guys bring Apartment 200 or bring like, you know, this experience there, and then from there branch out and start to work?
We're planning it to be as formulaic. You know what I mean? I'm not necessarily saying like Apartment 200, open up retail. We're
like a franchise.
Like, it's not like we need one to be the other. But that being said, we identify the importance of being able to offer more than just a t-shirt. You know, how many brands are in X store? Like, even some of the best stores, you go and you're like, what the fuck is this thing?
And
you know,
I think just a physical presence to a brand super important nowadays, because there's so many, you know, Instagram brands popping up here and there, and it's like hard to keep track of stuff. And it's like that's something, like you said, the experiential part of it that was, you know, the core of our business, just gives us kind of that edge. So we always, and it excites us, so we want to kind of just keep playing on that. So I think building a community wherever we are is definitely important, like we did in Montreal and Toronto.
Yeah, whether there be the bar there to hold that down, or whether it be like finding, like in New York, we don't have, like in LA, we have some pretty clear plans of where we want to take and what we're trying to do with Apartment 200 out there. We'd love to open up an Apartment 200 out in New York for sure. It's definitely a goal of ours, but we've been able to start establishing the community and a group of friends out here that like wear our gear and make sure to talk about it and like support us. And it's funny, you know, there's so, like, as Nate was saying, there's so many brands right now, and the turnover is so quick between like 1 minute, it's like, oh, this is their moment, and then it's like 10 minutes later, and that moment's fleeting, you know? I think for us, it's a matter of really building, like we've been saying, experiences a lot, but Nate hit on a good point with communities in each of these major markets that we do go to. Like, we're in Paris pretty often, we're in New York pretty often, we're in LA pretty often. Those are three markets that for us, we like hold our friendships very close. We have real networks of people there that luckily are down to support us. And I think the bar helps in building kind of like a clubhouse for those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But we just like,
yeah, that's kind of how it acts. That's how it's acted in Montreal and Toronto, and how we're hoping it works in LA as well. But we're not limiting the lifestyle to just that. Like, our plan is to do it. Like, we want to do a Paris Fashion Week party in June. Like, that's a very clear plan of ours. Is that that's allowing us to maybe introduce that St. Woods lifestyle? Because I was laughing with our friend Deb in LA earlier this week. But it's like, when you come to one of our parties, when you come to Apartment 200, we're not like, it's not your traditional nightlife experience or party experience. Like, we're not the kind of like owners of the company or in the bar that have their booth with a rope around it. Like, we're at the corner of that bar offering everybody who walks in a drink, because we know that we just want like the best parties are parties where people feel comfortable. And we don't like we went to Fashion Week and it was definitely interesting and exciting, but it was so much of that like who's who, like looking around. It wasn't like a comfortable family vibe, and that's something that we're really trying to like,
it's like a clout convention. Those were clout convention
for us. It's like, yo, I think it's as important to have that young person who's actually in there, like having fun. Like, because so many of these, like, during a clout convention, it's so rare that anybody's having any fun. You know what I mean?
Out-clouting each other. But that's it. We were literally talking about this the other day. We went to some party and we were like, this party would have been dope if you just let like 30 kids who would have had fun in there. Yeah. And then they'd set the tone. But
these people are here for work.
No, but everyone's trying to be seen or this or that. But it's like, if you let in those kids that are going to set the vibe, you know, and just really be having fun, like, everybody else lets loose too. And that's important. And we noticed this back in the day, like when we were throwing parties, it's like, if you were kind of just standing around being lame, like, everybody would look at you and be like, okay, that's the vibe here. But it's like, if you were just at the DJ booth, like going in on every song, and they're like, okay, these guys throw the parties, this is the vibe, I'm gonna let loose here next weekend. Exactly.
Well, yeah, and I think for us, we really do just like to make sure that people are having a good time. It's like the same thing with our clothing, or even when we're trying to do events with brands, or we're doing branding for brands. It's like, yo, people are out, there's so much shit going on in the world right now. We're out here to deliver like a good time, and not like, we take our business selves very seriously. We dot our I's and cross our T's when we're in business, but at the same time, people want to have a smile on their face. They don't want to be at, like, I love this cloud convention term, but they don't want to be at something like that, you know? It's like, that t-shirt's coming, watch out. All to say, I think that making sure that people are actually having fun in events and actually experiencing like a real, that's when those like mixes in cultures happen, you know, when someone is like, that cool person is having too much fun, they're going to meet their next intern or this, you know what I mean? Like, that's when that shit happens, when people are out of their comfort zone and like being honest about it.
That's how I've made some of my closest friends, was just like partying and out and stuff. And you just realize, you're like, oh, I actually like mess with this person when they're like stopped, kind of like when you both let your guard down a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
It's so funny when you're like midway through like a party at like a place like Apartment 200, you're like, wait a minute, this is what networking is.
This is what it's supposed to be.
This is not that bad.
Yeah. And on the topic of like, you know, networking, like, you know, embracing like the next wave of creatives and stuff. And Zach, with you like starting very young in your business career too, like, what is some like advice that you guys do give to like younger creatives on the come up?
My favorite piece of advice is just answer your emails and send emails if you get asked. Like, so many people come up to us, it's like, I want to work with you. And I always say the same thing. I'm like, just send me an email. And I never get an email from that person. So I think that that's one thing. And then it's about being humble. Like, we joked before that it's like, there's that pop dealer, but then he also is like a creative director on his Instagram. It's like, I'm nowhere close to being a real creative director at a massive company. Just like, I'm not putting that shit on my Instagram handle right now. And I think you got to be humble, work hard, answer emails, and like, just keep working.
And like, I think like identifying what you want to do and putting yourself in the right place to achieve that. And then, you know, applying all those skills that Zach just mentioned to that. But part of it is being in the right place and identifying what you want to do. It's like, go out there and get it. Cause it's like, if you're not the one pushing yourself forward, self-motivation, like if you're not self-motivated, like, nobody's going to hand you anything, you know? And that's just reality. Like, and there's a lot of people that want it nowadays. And at the end of the day, you got to work harder and work smarter and, you know, put yourself in the right position to get it done.
I also think that often, I know this is going to sound cliche, but people get so scared of failure. You know what I mean? Like, yes, there's the haters are there whether you're succeeding or failing. So haters aren't a reason to do or don't do anything. But I think that even after you've seen some success, or if you haven't seen any success yet, or to be honest,
resilient.
Even if you've seen a ton, like, it doesn't exist like, there's no such thing as like 365 sunny days in a year. There's going to be some bad days out there. And like, myself and Nate have taken some absolute beatings on events or on days or on all kinds of different experiences, you know? Mm-hmm. And all that we do is like, I take that beating. I'm waking up early the day after I take my hardest beating than the day after I have my best event. Mm. Right. Because for me, it's like, we're both motivated by like, we hold ourselves to a very high standard. And I think that you got to do that for yourself. You got to make sure that when you are going through that rough day, when you aren't getting the deal you want, when it's, man, how is my manufacturing so late? How is the shipping so confusing? It's like, those are what's going to actually tell your story. The good days are easy. That's everyone has that.
But at the same time, also when you have a success, don't be too hung up on the one success, you know, obviously enjoy yourself and have fun along the way. Cause like that's part of it as well. But it's like, you know, if anytime you saw success, you're like, oh, okay, I'm good now. Kick your feet up. Easy. Like somebody else is going to beat you to the punch. So it's just, again, it comes back to just, you know, being humble, working hard, being resilient.
I want to add on to Zach's answer and just say that, like, if you don't get the reply immediately, follow up on your emails, dog. Definitely. That's massive. Like, no one tells you that.
Yeah. Nobody tells
you
that.
It turns into a meme as soon as you're 24 years old and you have to, like, get paid. You have to follow up on invoices shit.
And people expect that, like, and, like, I see it on both sides of the coin. Like, I work with some big brands and, like, we are, like, a growing agency and I obviously like to think what we do is pretty dope, but, like, I understand that I'm not on the top of your list.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you got to be humble and expect that. And even I think some of the people who at the biggest, they could be at the pinnacle of their career right now. It's important to always remember that, like, there's going to be people that have other shit on their plate, and don't take it as insult or as anything to think if they're not getting back to you. Like, I try and answer all my emails, but there's some that slip through the cracks. And if somebody didn't follow up with me, sometimes I'll even lose a great opportunity.
Exactly.
So I think it's like, it's important that A, answer the people who are hitting you up, but make sure that if somebody told you they're going to do something with you, like even Ben, like with this, like Ben was like, yo, we want to do a Hypebeast Radio. I was super stoked, but I understand that you guys are launching like a huge platform here. And there's a lot of interesting people who are coming through. So you got to make sure that you stay in contact, that you're able like, okay, when are we going to come to town? When are we making this happen? And it's like, it's important on both sides to just make sure that you're doing that.
The behind the scenes of this is that it does take like bouncing emails off of each other,
totally,
figuring
man.
Out when you're going to be available. And then even then you might get a blizzard the day before you're supposed
to try. I think that's not just for like an interview or a press situation. I think that's anything you do. Like when we're trying to open up a venue or we're trying to like expand our business, like you're trying to raise money, you're trying to do all these different things. Like, yo, people have a lot of shit going on in their lives right now. You don't expect that you're on the top of their list every day.
You're not that important.
You're never that important. It's takes some time. Yeah.
Yeah. And with that advice, a good way that we like to end our podcast is if you were to go back to your younger selves when you're 13 and give yourselves advice, what would that advice be?
Yo, if I was to go back and talk to 13-year-old Zach and tell him that he was even like doing anything that is going on right now, mm-hmm. I would have like been like, yo, where do I sign? This is the best thing ever.
And yeah,
like, but now that I'm here, I'm only looking to my next 10 years, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that for me, it's set lofty goals and mm-hmm. then do all the other advice that we talked about earlier. But it's really like, you are going to end up pretty close. I think that most people end up pretty close to their goals. Not everybody accomplishes them, but if you set them, you go after them. So like, don't make your goal, well, unless that's what you really want to do, but like maybe don't make your goal to be like the head barista, be like, yo, I want to open up coffee shops across North America. Like, you're going to end up in two very different places. Both you get to work with coffee. Both you get to like be on the floor and be involved, mm-hmm. but like set those lofty goals. I think that for me, like this was never really, like I'm very happy with where the plans lined up, but 13-year-old Zach thought he was going to go to law school and do all these other things. And now it's like, I'm 28. I'm blessed as hell. I get to work with the coolest brands. I got an amazing business partner. It's like, yo, I just kind of let that happen and keep pushing that goal. It's like every time I was like, oh, if I could open one club in Montreal, that would be amazing. Now we've got like 3 in Montreal, 1 in Toronto. We're looking at LA. If I would have just ended after like, oh, I got my club, life's good now. I can start doing drugs. I can start not caring. I can like, that's going to hurt you. Like Nate said, it's like, keep pushing that, keep growing that dream and never feel like fully content in where you are, because that's going to slow you down too.
Yeah.
And Nate's been stroking his chin, so I know he's got some really
I was really trying to think. Like, I think stuff's changed a lot since I was 13, because when I was 13, nobody was really telling you that there was creative fields you could go into.
Right.
It was like, it was always kind of like traditional. Like, I always hated school, and it was like traditional jobs. You go to college, you become a doctor or a firefighter. Like, it wasn't like the creative industries weren't really as open about it. So, I mean, I would give myself some advice that you don't have to go into that traditional job setting. But I mean, until I was probably like, 13, 14 is when I realized I was not going to be Michael Jordan. And how am I going to get that lifestyle without being that good at basketball? So then it was, I mean, that's kind of when I started identifying, maybe not that young, but you know, in your teenage years, identifying like, okay, who are people that seem like they have good lives that like...
Who has their shit together.
Yeah, and it wasn't all about like spectacular natural talent. It was kind of more about like how you're putting yourself out there and kind of like working hard and making the right moves to be successful.
Yeah, to create that lifestyle.
I mean, it isn't a specific piece of advice, I'd say, to my 13-year-old self, but it was just kind of overall... spectrum.
It's funny because if you went back and talked to 13-year-old us, we would have been like, yo, what is a podcast?
What is a podcast?
Yeah, exactly.
Stop even 13 years. Like, we were talking like 5 years ago. Myself and Nate were first coming to New York because it was right before we opened up Suu. And like before we opened up our first restaurant, we decided we were planning on moving to New York. I don't want to keep this going too long, but we started coming to New York. I remember we got on like some street style blogs. It was like the biggest thing in the world to get there, you know? And then it's like, if you would have told us 5 years later that we'd be coming from LA where we were looking to lock in our venue to then come and have an interview with you guys, it would have been like, wow, you know, like that's it. Like, we've done it. We made it. And now that we're here, with as much as I'm very happy to be on this podcast, I've
never... You got a meeting right after this.
No, yeah. I've never felt more to say that I've never felt... like my goals are farther away, which is a good thing. You know what I mean? So it's like we've surpassed the goals that we had even 5 years ago, but now it's like, yo, the goals I'm setting for my next five, my next 10 years aren't even close. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm just fighting every day even harder because now I know how hard it was to get here. I'm excited for the challenge and to work our ass off and to make it happen to get to those next set of goals, you know?
Awesome.
For sure.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming.
Thank you guys for having us.
Time.
No doubt.
Thank you.
Doors open anytime you guys want to come back through.
For sure. Shout out Hype Beast.
Gang shit, squad shit, cut.